Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for iOS Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Today, some apps we can't live without, plus one Mike Elgin says he's got to have, and a very special guest star. It's time for iOS Today. iOS Today is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. If you have a growing business and you want to acquire more customers, you need ActiveCampaign. Their solution goes beyond marketing automation to get the right type of message to the right person at the right time. For a free trial, go to ActiveCampaign.com/twit. And by TurboTax Live, new from TurboTax. Now you can get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or EA right on your screen. Talk live with a tax expert as often as you need for tax advice to help you file with confidence. Go to TurboTaxLive.com/iOS today. Ha, 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 ha. Hey, everybody. Welcome to iOS Today. Leo Laporte here. Megan Maroney has the week off. But guess who's here in her place? The wonderful and talented Micah Sargent. Hi, Micah.
Hi there, Leo. I'm a little disappointed. I was trying to quickly get a photo of Mark Zuckerberg up on my iPad to hold over the screen, but I didn't get that done in time.
He's testifying in a little bit in front of Congress. 2 days of testimony. The poor guy. I'm starting to feel sorry for him. Aw.
Get that guy some water.
Aw. He's going to be swallowing a lot. Did you see I'm sure you did, Micah, the Saturday Night Live weekend update featuring Mark Zuckerberg's apology? Wow. Wow. I thought it was
funny. I'm curious if his suit that he's wearing in Congress has some special stuff. Like, remember how he had that hoodie that had the credo or whatever for Facebook sewn into the fabric? I wonder if his suit has that too.
What? Are you kidding me? That's crazy.
Yeah, he had a...
Like, you couldn't see it? It was hidden?
He wore a hoodie to an interview. I think it was for Recode, but before Recode was Recode, if I remember correctly. And he was on stage and then talked about it, or somehow they figured out that he had this like credo in his hoodie. And so he pulls it off and he's like sweating underneath profusely, and he holds it out, and there's like the Facebook move fast and break things.
Inside where you can't see it, huh?
Yeah.
We should mention that Micah is at Mobile Nations. He's with iMore, of course, and does a podcast, couple of podcasts, including one on Relay FM with Dan Morin, right? There's his
Clockwise.
There's his website, Micah, MIKAH.co. And we thought today, since Megan's got the week off, we'd bring Micah in. He's great. He's an iPad lover. And ask him about his iOS recommendations, iPad and iPhone. I shouldn't project. I know you use the iPhone. Do you use an iPad too?
Yeah, I do. I've got my, 10.5, whatever it is, the newer iPad Pro here.
Yeah.
And this is like... this is when I read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Like, this is my Hitchhiker's Guide. This is the perfect tablet. I love this thing so much.
It's
in rose gold, of course.
All the knowledge of the world in it. It is kind of amazing. Exactly. I remember in 2010 when Steve Jobs announced the iPad, my immediate reaction afterwards was, this is the computer Apple and Steve always wanted to make. This is really where they were headed. This thing that's so light and thin and yet has all the world's information available to you at a fingertip is exactly the Apple II was the first one they made, but that's because of the limitations of technology. The iPad was what they wanted to make, I think.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And then, you know, having the Apple Pencil there for creatives, of which I don't tend to be a very good artist, but I certainly have the Apple Pencil. I mean, if you're going to have the iPad Pro, you better get the Pencil too.
I know.
So it just sort of hangs out.
A little, you know, give Apple an extra $100. Why not?
No big deal.
No big deal. They need it. Actually, you see, I have my pencil attached at all times, and you're right. I rarely unholster it. It's down here. It's on my case. I have the Logitech Slim Combo case. But I found recently a use for it. I have all the pencil apps, you know, like... all the note-taking apps. I like GoodNotes. I don't know which one you use. And I found recently a use for it. I've started using it as a sketchbook. And the funny thing is I started doing a paper sketchbook and I said, well, wait a minute, I've got a pencil and an iPad for like as I'm writing computer programs, doing analysis and sketches of what it's going to look like. And I find it really actually very useful because you can zoom in and you can, you know, create details and stuff. As you can see, I'm definitely not an artist. That's a UFO.
Well, you got UFO underneath. So
I wrote UFO, so I would know what the hell that was. But it's not for me. This is actually just a sketch, a useful notebook. I know my handwriting is terrible too, so I've never found a use for the iPad until I realized, oh, I can use it to kind of sketch out ideas. One of the things I find, I'm taking a computer programming class, is that and the class encourages is to understand the problem. Sometimes it's really helpful to do physical drawings.
Yeah.
And so that's
absolutely,
that's a use for it. So do you never use your pencil?
Oh, no, I do. In fact, it's sort of the same thing. I do a lot of DIY projects, woodworking and plumbing and all kinds of sort of in-home building and fixing and renovating projects. And the iPad is perfect for that. So I can sort of diagram out, you know, if I'm putting up a photo display or something like that, I can diagram it out, get the measurements in there. If I'm building something, I can get all that laid out and then head to Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever. And okay, I need this many pieces of this kind of wood and this, you know, it's really awesome for that. And I've tried different things to pull that off. And I find that this is the best way to do it for me because I can tie in links and I can, you know, throw in images if I'm feeling inspired by certain things. So it is, again, it's like scrapbook, sketchbook, personal keeper. It's all in there, and it's all very portable because of how thin and light it is. And I think that the size is perfect for me. That bigger iPad, I used to have one of those, and that was just way too big. But this one's perfect size for me.
It's funny that you should say that because I also had the 12.9, and that was the first iPad Pro I bought. And it really, I felt embarrassed carrying it around. So I ended up giving it to one of our employees, Greg Burnett, who's a really talented artist. I said, you're going to have to get your own pencil, buddy. But I gave him the tip. And it really is perfect for an artist. But I'm with you. I'm not an artist. But for this is a good size. A 10.5 is a good size. Mm-hmm. Although I kind of look at the 12.9 and think, maybe I should. I don't know. Maybe I'm waiting to see what Apple does this year because maybe I do want a bigger one. I did read a story. I think it was on Reddit about a college student who said, do any of you do this? Cause I don't see a lot of iPads in my physics course. A lot of laptops, a lot of people typing, but he says, I use Notability, which is a great little program that lets you record audio as, I think this is the one. Yeah. That lets you record audio as you're taking notes. So the notes are tied to the audio, and I thought, boy,
excellent.
That is really a good use. Because in college classes, it's good to take notes, but you also, if you could have the whole lecture, and then the note that you took is tied to the audio at that moment, so you can jump to the audio. I know, isn't that
like,
a great
idea?
Like,
oh man, what was this that I was writing about? You hit that, you hear the professor. That's exactly. A really great feature.
Yeah, I think it's a really clever idea. So what app do you use to do your sketches and notes?
Well, typically, if I'm just doing stuff for projects, I'll just use the Notes app because it's so easy. I can access it even if the screen is locked. If you have your Apple Pencil, like that's one of my favorite things. Screen is locked. I just tap with the Apple Pencil. It pops open the Notes app and I'm right there. But there are a few other apps that I like, including, Linea Sketch. And I can't remember how this is pronounced. I'm going to search it. Sketches. It's like Taya Sui Sketches. It's just called Sketches Pro whenever you download the app. But what I love about Sketches Pro is the number of tools that it has. I find that most of the third-party apps tend to sort of limit it to a particular set of tools. And they do a good job with those. But with Sketches Pro, it's made for designers and artists, but it has all of these different ways to sort of build out, you know, diagrams and things like that. So I really like that app. And I use that whenever I'm, you know, getting serious. But for a quick note, it's definitely just the Notes app.
I'm taking notes in Notability of all your recommendations. Sketches Pro. See how bad my handwriting is? It's terrible. But I was recording as we were doing this. So when I play back the recording, this will go to your mention of Sketches Pro.
Oh, there you go.
I think it's kind of interesting that Apple's now, and they announced this in their education event, they're now offering a $329 iPad that has pencil support. And for a student, I think, while it doesn't have pressure sensitivity, at least it has that note-taking capability. So I think the folks who make Sketches Pro and Notability and GoodNotes are probably rubbing their hands in glee.
Oh, absolutely. The second that that happened, I have a good friend of mine, and she's an incredible artist. And the iPad Pro is just outside of the budget. And when, you know, this announcement happened, it's like, I can use this with the Apple Pencil now. I'm getting this yesterday. Yeah. You know, she has an iPad. She's ready to turn that in and get this one. But yeah, for the education market, I mean, I can imagine that company or not companies, but schools will buy these apps in, you know, bulk and be able to do the sketching and note taking and things like that in class. And so it's exciting. And I hope that what this does too is improve those tools for the rest of us, because if we've got to focus on younger kids with even poorer handwriting in many cases that adults have, I could see that sort of benefiting all of us.
It's actually when it's almost as if I haven't used I'm a lefty, my left hand for that kind of fine detail in so long that it's like I'm right like a third grader. I might as well hold the pencil on my fist and write like a caveman, you know. I'm looking at GoodNotes. Fortunately, one of the things GoodNotes does is it lets you zoom in on an area. Let me see if I can figure out how to do that. But you can zoom in on an area, and then it puts up a. Actually, now I forgot how to do this. Oh, here it is. It puts up a close up of it.
Oh, nice.
So you can actually, and then notice there's a grid. So if I click here, this helps.
my writing.
I mean, it obviously they're gonna have to do a lot of tools that help people who are not used to using their fist.
And I think that's this. Why the Logitech crayon is a great thing, because it's a lot thicker.
Is it?
And,
okay
yeah, well, no, sorry, I shouldn't say a lot thicker, it's thicker. And I think that there is some logic to like jumbo crayons and things like that. There's a reason that those tools are better, that give you better control. And even as adults, I mean, a lot of people who buy fountain pens get them, you know, they're thicker than what the Apple Pencil comes in. And so I really see that as being helpful. And that's why I'm a little sad that the Logitech crayon is only available through education purchases.
You can't buy it. Yeah.
Nope. Yeah. And that makes me a little sad, because I think it would be cool to have and try it out. I mean, because you get, except for the pressure sensitivity, you get all of the other capabilities that the Apple Pencil has. And I think they're pretty brilliant about making it so that you don't have to pair it with a particular iPad.
Right.
That's one of the smartest things that they did, I think.
Yeah, they don't have, it's not a Bluetooth pairing as with the Apple Pencil. But there's also a education reason, I didn't know about this, that because they want to be able to disable Bluetooth during tests. So part of the new homework software has a kiosk test mode. And the reason is the kids would use Bluetooth to send each other notes and answers on their Apple watches or on their phones. And so they don't want to have any connectivity in the iPad during testing, but they still want them to be able to use a pencil. So that's why they had to come up with a new way of connecting the pencil
Interesting.
To the iPad. Yeah. So we brought Micah here, not only because we love Micah, but also because it's fun when we get somebody who is a kind of proficient iPad user on to find out more about how they use their iPad. We've actually already started by talking about note-taking apps, but you put together a list of some of your favorite iOS apps, iPhone and iPad, and we thought we'd share them with you. So let's go down that list, starting with the first one, which is actually some hardware.
Yeah. I've got quite a bit of hardware on the list, and that's because I tend to, you know, despite all of the tools that are available, I really like to try and find ways to stick to the basics and come up with ways to use, you know, the iPad sort of maybe how Apple intended, so to speak. And there are some tools that obviously you require if you're going to do even bigger and greater things. But the first thing that's on the list, I would consider myself like pretty well versed in home automation. I have been steeping in home automation since as long as I could, basically. And I am a HomeKit button evangelist. Oh. I'll go ahead and give myself that title.
I didn't even know there was any HomeKit stuff. I mean, it's been so long. So this is one of them.
Yeah. So, you know, that it's interesting that you talk about that. One of the sort of narratives that seems to still exist to this day is the one that came when HomeKit first shipped. And that's the idea that there aren't very many HomeKit products out there. There aren't very many HomeKit products available for anyone to buy. And that's simply not the case anymore. There are hundreds now at this point of different accessories that you can purchase from several different companies. And that number is actually about to increase because Apple just enabled software authentication for commercial companies. I wrote an article about this, but basically everyone thought that right after WWDC, software authentication was given to everyone, including commercial manufacturers of HomeKit products, and that wasn't the case. It just shipped with iOS 11.3. So we're going to see a lot more.
Prior to this, did you have to get hardware certification, send it into Apple? I mean, what was the process before?
Yeah. So before iOS 11.3, if you were a manufacturer of HomeKit products, so you were going to sell these products on the market, you had to pass several different certifications. So depending on if you had Bluetooth or Wi-Fi as your connectivity option, you had to pass all of those certifications from, you know, the Bluetooth SIG or the Wi-Fi Alliance. On top of that, you had to have something called the Apple Authentication Coprocessor. And this was a literal hardware chip that would do all of the encryption and certification and communication between the two devices.
So that's a real stumbling block for people who want to design something like this. It costs a lot more to make a HomeKit-enabled device than it does for some of these other Zigbee and Z-Wave.
Yes, Zigbee and Z-Wave.
Yeah.
And especially if you already have something out on the market, that's especially where this concern comes into play. Because if you're a new company and you know that you want to focus on HomeKit, there are plenty of companies out there that make these modules that already have the Apple Motion coprocessor, but the Apple Authentication coprocessor built in. So you can sort of buy that and build on top of it and make it unique however you want to. But when it comes to, you know, companies like Nest that already have them out on the market, they'd have to go back to the drawing board and figure out how to work in that chip. And that's just not cost effective. So as of iOS 11.3, now Apple is allowing those companies to use software authentication. They don't have to build in this hardware chip. So you can essentially put out a firmware update, and it gives you access to HomeKit, and you can, you know, then market a HomeKit compatible product.
That's huge. So that means existing hardware already installed in people's houses can be updated with software only and work with HomeKit suddenly.
Yes, in theory. Wow. The thing that's important.
That?
Well, I can't talk about that yet.
Okay. Somebody with lawyers is. Okay.
There are some companies that are working on it, and I'm waiting to communicate with several of them about that. But the interesting thing is, and something that I've talked to developers about, is the differences between the two, between hardware authentication and software authentication. And one thing that's important to note is that the security doesn't change. The security is still there. It's how that security is sort of accessed and put into place. And so if you think about, you know, if I know that I have to meet these certain specifications, and all I have to do is build a chip in and then, you know, do a little bit of coding that works with it versus having to figure that all out on my own, a lot of companies are going to take the option of building in this hardware chip because they don't have to think about it. There's not as much going into it.
Well, and here's an important issue, especially with IoT devices. Apple's kind of guaranteeing security by doing that.
You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and there's a certain badge of security for consumers as well. Like they feel, you know, this is HomeKit compatible. Yeah. That means something.
Right. And it's on Apple, not on you. That's actually, I can understand why that would be very desirable. So will companies going forward still sometimes include that chip?
That's the big thing. Yes, absolutely. There are going to be companies that still do it. I mean, the one of the companies that we're going to talk about here, Elgato, all of their hardware so far features that chip because they've been building it that way for forever. Okay. And the Eve line is a fantastic line of products that they have that uses it's Bluetooth connected as opposed to Wi-Fi connected.
So tell us about this Eve button that you you picked here.
Perfect.
What does this do?
So this is one of the I feel is one of the most important products that anyone who is a HomeKit enthusiast can buy. And the big reason about this is because of the fact that I consider this to be a product that brings everyone into liking smart home technology. Okay. One of the biggest hurdles is I can say, okay, I just put in a bunch of lights and the way that you use them is via an app or using your voice. And then people come over or maybe people who you live with are like, but before I could just hit the switch on the wall, why the heck do I have to now, pull out an app and do this? With a button, you can program this to complete certain tasks, so to speak. So you can set it to turn on all the lights. You can set it to turn off all the lights. You can set it for a specific room to do specific actions depending on what things you have available. So the Elgato Eve button has three different gestures. There's a tap, there's a double tap, and then there's a long press. I have this Elgato Eve set up in my bedroom, in the master bedroom, and the way that I have it set up is pressing it once turns on all the lights in the master bedroom. So that's the overhead light and two Philips Hue lights that I have set up. Pressing it twice turns all of them off. But the long press is a special one that I use whenever I am going to bed at night, whenever I need to maybe get up to use the restroom or just want a little bit of light. It turns on my two Philips Hue light, turns them red, and then puts their brightness down to about 20%. So nice. It doesn't. red light energy, red waves do not go out as far as higher level energy waves. And so they tend to just provide a little bit of brightness without, ending up waking anybody up or anything like that. That's why red is the color to choose there.
So the Eve button's $50. So, which is actually a pretty good price, I think, for something like this. So that means you could put one by your bed. The bathroom button, you hit that, it's red, you get up, you go to the bathroom, come back, and then you hit it again, does it turn it off?
Yeah, if you hold it down again, then it sort of undoes the action that you've just done.
Can you overload the button, have it do different things like two taps, three taps, long hold, that kind of thing?
It depends on if you do it with HomeKit, then you've got those three options. There's the one tap, there's the two tap, and then there's the there's the long press. But you can set up any actions that you want for those three things. So you can set it to certain scenes or whatever you'd like.
Got it. So that's good. So you get three different functions for each button depending on.
Exactly.
So when you get up in the morning, you could say double tap for daylight.
Yeah, or you could even say double tap not only turns on the lights in my bedroom, but like turns on the smart switch that's connected to my coffee pot and rolls up the windows if you've got smart blinds. I mean, it can be literally anything.
I'm going to have to look at this. Now, if you're going to do HomeKit, do you have to have any other hardware? Is there a hub? What?
So if you just have an Eve button in your house, then you could just use it as is because it connects with everything else that's connected over your smartphone through HomeKit.
So it sees all the stuff like the Hue hub, because Hue has its own hub.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. As long as it's connected via HomeKit. But if you want to be able to access those things outside the house and you want to be able to sort of set your configurations, then you need to have either an Apple TV, a HomePod, or an iPad in your house set up as a home hub. The HomePod does it automatically whenever you first set up the product. With your Apple TV, there is an option in settings to do it. And with your iPad, there is an option in settings to do that. You can literally do a Google search for set up iPad home hub. And I'm sure my article is one of the first to come up.
I'm going to read it. Yeah. So now I think what really can kick home automation into gear is people hearing one application that they go, oh, I could really use that. And then once you spent hundreds of dollars on Hue lights and Eve switch, Then you think of other things you could do with it, and you start to expand. You get the bug. Yeah, yeah.
And that's it is not, you know, it's fun to be able to say, look, I'm a magician, watch me turn these lights green. But the real fun is whenever you can set up your whole home and things start to work automatically for you. Yeah. The hallway light in my house, it turns on and off automatically. I don't need to worry about flipping a switch. There's a motion sensor in the hallway. It turns off whenever it doesn't detect motion after like 2 minutes or something like that. At night, it comes on at a lower brightness so that it doesn't, again, wake anybody up. And all these things can sort of work together depending on your location and how many people are in the home and if, you know, one person's entering or if many people are exiting. I mean, there's so many options that you don't start to think of until you do get all of these products built into your house.
I want to get something that plays heavy metal, death metal, when Bitcoin goes. What was it Guilfoyle does on Silicon Valley? When the cost of mining Bitcoin gets lower than the cost of the electricity, he has a death metal song plays on his computer so he can flip the switch to turn on his miner.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Although, when I'm watching, this was on the most recent episode. When I'm watching that, I'm thinking, well, if Guilfoyle really was a good programmer, he wouldn't have the separate step of flipping the switch.
Yeah,
he would just do it.
Do it automatically. Yeah.
But obviously, the guys who write Silicon Valley aren't programmers.
I really want Apple to add music options to HomeKit automation. Yeah. It needs to be there.
Yeah, because I have the HomePod. What do you? Is the Apple TV the HomePod? What was the third choice for having an
iPad?
The iPad. Which is the best way to make a hub?
Well, here's the thing. This is the cool thing. You don't have to choose one. They all work together. They can, as soon as you set them up, if you've got that in your home, it's going to, HomeKit is smart enough to know what is closest to what device because of the way that you set these things up. So my Apple TV, it knows it's in the master bedroom. If I've got something Bluetooth or Wi-Fi nearby and it's closer to that, then that Apple TV is going to communicate and, you know, make those automations happen. In the case of my office here, I've got another, it's the Logitech Pop smart switch that's on the wall, and I use that to control all the lights in here. It's going to use the HomePod that's there behind me on the desk. That's going to be the tool that does, you know, the communication whenever you're out of the house and things like that. So you set up as many as you want and don't worry about it. HomeKit's going to take care of that for you. So set them all up as home hubs, and HomeKit's smart enough to figure out what's available, what's not.
And if you happen to have a HomePod, then you can use your voice with it, right?
Yeah, and you could use that, you know, with your phone as well.
That's kind of cool. All right, man, I'm going to read all your articles and I'm going to do something. Because I have Hue lights. Right now, the only thing I do is I have a motion sensor. So when I walk in my office, the lights come on. But I'd like it to be, that doesn't work out so well because I also have the lights dim and then turn off after a period of time. And so I'm sitting and watching TV and the lights go off. Which is fine. I'm watching TV and then I stretch and the lights come back on. So yeah, I have to come up with a better solution. I go, oh, wow, it's bright. Thank you, Kevin. All right. This is good. I'm really glad we talked about this. Item number two, we're looking at Micah Sargent's iOS kit. This is the Mophie Charge Stream. What is this?
This is a new product from Mophie. Mophie, when Apple first announced that it was going to start doing wireless charging, it came out with another charge pad. And it is my favorite wireless charging pad. It's simple. It's black. It's got a tiny little LED light. It is... it's super thin. It works. I've never had any problem with it. And my favorite thing about it is it seems to work a little bit better no matter where you put your phone on it, whereas some of the other ones are a little more picky about that. The Charge Stream Pad Plus, which, what a name, is better because it has up to 10 watts of power. So you're going to get more power out of this one. So it's basically Mophie's original charger, but you get even more juice, more bang for your buck, as long as you have a Qi enabled device. And I got to shout out Mophie because I've used several different wireless chargers, and this is the one that I've had the least problems with, has been the least sort of intrusive in terms of, it's the one that I keep next to my bed because it's not going to wake me up at night with a bright blue light. I hate that.
Don't put LEDs on your stuff, guys. It's really annoying.
Yeah, especially because I don't know of any device that does wireless charging that doesn't notify you that it is charging. So I don't need the base to tell me that it's charging.
Right, because the device goes or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. So how thin, this is one problem a lot of people, it's so funny because when Apple added Qi charging, it was fun to watch all the iPhone users kind of go through all the wireless charging woes that those of us had with wireless charging phones have, you know, gone through and solved over the years. One of the issues a lot of people with Samsung phones reported was you put the or even the Google Nexus phones, you put the phone on the charger, it would slide off, or it was hard to get it on the charger exactly right. Does this one do a good job? Is it how finicky is it about where the phone is placed on the charger?
That has been the best thing about the Mophie ones that I haven't had with some of the other ones, including the Samsung charger that I have here on my desk. The Mophie chargers have not been incredibly finicky. I've been able to, you know, again, like I lay down and then I pop it over there onto the charger and I can hear the buzz. It's good. It's charging.
Nice.
Yeah, they've done a good job about that.
All right. The Mophie Charge Stream. And how much is that?
That is a $60 Mophie Charge Stream Pad Plus. So it's like the other Mophie charger that Apple sells in its stores, but this one has more juice that you can get to your device.
More juice means it charges faster.
Yeah, 10 watts.
Oh, that's nice. Maybe Apple will do someday a wireless iPad, and then you could probably use this with that too.
Fingers crossed. I mean, they've got the Apple Watch that sort of does. I mean, it's going to work with their charger.
When is that coming out?
I don't know, but that's all the complaints I've seen. Everyone's going, announced a red iPhone, but you haven't got my charger yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that was, they announced that at the iPhone X event. They said, and coming next year, we're going to have a charger that'll charge your iPhone X, your AirPods, if you have the right case for it, and your Apple Watch, you put them all there on the and nothing. We haven't heard a thing since. Maybe June. Maybe September. Maybe who knows?
Yeah. Q3, Q4, who knows?
They have more money than God. and they don't seem to, like, you could, if you really wanted to, rush this thing out, couldn't you? I don't know. They don't care.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it'll come when it comes, and I'm still going to buy it. So
they'd be smart not to announce this stuff because the problem is that people wait.
Expectational debt is a big thing.
Yeah, and just don't announce it till it's ready. They've lately kind of started doing that, and I think
quite a bit with software and hardware. Yeah,
I think that's a mistake. You don't need to pre-announce it. Well, you do have some software for us. Tell us about
Weltery.
Weltery, what is that?
So huge shout out to my colleague, Serenity Caldwell. She did this really great piece on heart rate variability over on iMore. And one of the apps that she mentioned was Weltery. So this app, what it does is it uses the iPhone's LED paired with the camera to check your pulse rate, but it doesn't just check your pulse rate. What it's doing is taking your pulse rate and then taking it again and 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 comparing the differences between each of those pulses. So your heart, you know, contrans and expects.
That's what my heart does.
Yes. If your heart is doing that, please go see a doctor. Contracts and expands, and it is measuring the variability between those things. Now, this is what's interesting about heart rate variability. It is a near direct measure of how your autonomous nervous system is controlling your body or how it's not doing a good job of doing so. So you should have a high heart rate variability because the idea is that your nervous system knows, okay, Leo is about to go running, and so we need to increase his heart rate so that there's blood flowing to all the parts of his body so that his muscles stay oxygenated. But when Leo's sitting, then his heart should be slower. And so if you know, if the system sort of notices that the variability remains the same despite the fact that you are sitting or running, then that's a hint at how your nervous system is not responding correctly. And it gives a hint at how your anxiety is going, how your stress levels are, how your health is overall. And so this is just sort of a peek at one particular sort of, I like to think of it almost like a, it's like a peek at the software behind what makes us us. And so you can sort of dig in and get an impression of how your heart is doing.
Let me show you how this works, or you show me how it works, because I have it here, but yes. I've never used it. So
go ahead and pop it open.
Is this a free app? It didn't cost me anything. Weltery.
So, yeah, you can get a subscription. I think it adds more measures per week or something like that, but okay. I'm using it for free.
Okay. It does ask you to sign up, and you might consider the privacy implications of that. I don't know why you need to have an account to take your measurement, but I'm going to do it. So it says, take your first measurement. So I press the red button here.
Yes, the big old red button.
Now, one problem I might have is I have the Apple Folio. Well, let's see. Make sure your finger covers both the camera and the flash. Okay. Put your index finger over the camera just like that. So I'm covering it, them both, because it has to put... The flash puts light into your finger, and then the camera registers the heart.
Red levels, yeah.
Yeah, the heart rate. Weltery would like to access the camera, of course. It says camera iPhone 10 Global, selected heart rate monitor. Selected heart rate monitor.
Yeah, so you can add other heart rate monitors to it if you'd like, third-party heart rate monitors. And so it gives you an idea, okay, this is the one we're using right now. And it will give you feedback on, hey, you're moving a little bit too much, so you need to sit still, and then it won't complete the reading until you are, and it goes through the process of, again, essentially every time it's checking your pulse rate there, it's looking at the distances between them to inform its measurements. It does take a bit of time, though. That's the one thing.
And I'm not allowed to talk while I'm doing it.
Yeah. You have to remain very still.
I also notice that I have what they call white coat hypertension. It has to do with the fact that when you go to get your blood checked at the doctor's, your blood pressure goes through the roof.
I am that exact way, yes.
So when I look at my heart rate, it goes up. When it's kind of close my eyes and it goes down. Yeah,
do you need me to sing you a lullaby while you close your eyes?
Well, it's really an interesting effect because it goes up to 74 when I look at it, and it goes back down to 67 when I close my eyes.
That's a pretty good heart rate you've got, actually.
I'm in better shape than I look. I'm just going to rest now.
You're getting close. Oh, but you got a notification.
Yeah, my Ember mug battery is low. I'll talk about that in a second. So anyway, it's almost done.
Yeah, you're getting there, and you're going to see in a second, it's going to give you readings for your stress, what it thinks that, what I like is it also gives you measurements if you tend to be someone who does hard exercise. It says, hey, today's a rest day, you need to take it easy because your body needs to recoup, and that's the only way that you're sort of going to feel better. And it asks you, how are you feeling today? How'd you sleep? What's a particular mood? And it pops up this little word cloud of these are the things that I'm feeling right
what
now.
What happened? This is like
I've just had some coffee.
Yesterday, I could do better. Weekend, overworked, hungry. I have PMS. I'm chatting. I'm traveling. Yesterday, I
always
walked.
Tap coffee.
What happened? I walked yesterday. and I also, let's see, running, traveling, chatting, meeting. I'm confused. Oh, I'm chatting right now. Aren't I chatting? Yes.
There you go, chatting.
I'm chatting. And then...
you had some coffee with
I'm
milk.
At work.
I think there's an option there.
Oh, is there coffee? Oh, okay. Where's the... Oh my God.
Yeah,
I scrolled up. There's a lot more. I'm doing public speaking right now. I am right, aren't I?
Yeah,
I think there's I think there's somebody
that
watching.
Counts.
I might be wrong. Okay.
Are you there?
Coffee. Good. So I think I've added this is a pretty
you've
good
been very thorough.
That's yeah, maybe you don't need to be so thorough. Okay. It's estimating my stress resilience. Okay. 10:02 a.m. walk yesterday, chatting, work, public speaking, coffee. Performance. Okay, what's going on here? Am I seeing
something? Yeah, so in the top left, that one called performance, that's the one that's talking about,
dragging.
Here's how you're doing right now. Should you be out working?
What does dragging mean? You're not doing so great. You're definitely overworked. The good news is you're relaxed, which means, oh, you know why? I worked out really hard yesterday.
There you go.
Is that what this is measuring?
Yeah. That is exactly right. So it's saying like, hey, you are stressed out, or you have been overworked, but at least like right now you are feeling relaxed. You are feeling. So that's actually, I mean, despite what it's saying is like, hey, here's a warning. You probably shouldn't go hard again today.
Oh, this is really cool. If it's real, if it's not a horoscope.
And it does better over time. As you add more measurements to it, as you add more heart rate variability to it, it figures out your baseline and then uses that to inform its readings. I found it to be pretty accurate in terms of stress. The performance one is not incredibly, like, I'm not very good at comparing that one to me, because I tend not to sort of, I don't have any sort of hard workouts that I'm doing.
Get to work, Micah. You need to stress yourself more.
There you go.
You're a young person.
Is that harmful. I'm not.
Oh my God! You're really stressed.
Yeah.
Now
I got 69%.
My performance cost says no sweat, which means I'm okay. Its recommendation is great. I love this. Don't plan to get anything complicated or nerve wracking done today. Try to leave work early. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Too bad the boss won't let me. Today's a good day to let your brain sink back into passive mode. Wow. This is good. Now, what is this free demo? This is something you'd pay for, right?
Yeah, so you can add more. There's options to add more, you know, heart rate sensors and more tests every time.
Wow, this is really cool.
Right? There's a lot of information in this. And what I recommend, if anyone does try this, let it send you a reminder to do your reading every morning. I think it needs 7 to 10 days. And at that point, that's whenever it determines your baseline and it can better inform.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because it doesn't know me. It doesn't have a baseline really for how I am. It does say I'm low on energy, but it looks like I'm recovering. I have an energy shortage. My energy trend is charging. My functional capacity is 11%. I'm sorry, Micah. I'm not giving you my best today. I apologize.
Well, it certainly feels great.
Wow.
So.
You're not either, though. You're stressed,
too,
right?
No, I'm stressed. Yeah.
I have weak stress. It says you're too relaxed.
Oh, dear.
Too relaxed. It says this can happen right after waking up or before going to bed. If you're really tired, it also happens when your body's trying to recover after a tough workout. That is true. I really worked out hard yesterday. So that's really interesting.
Yeah,
that's
so
really. I will do this again. This is really cool. Weltory, Weltory. The real test is how after a week or so how accurate it is.
Exactly.
So
give it a go and commit to it. It does. Like, it reminds me every morning at 10 a.m. Hey, you know, now's a good time to do a reading. And so I'll, you know, take a second to do it. And I found that it has been pretty accurate. And reading about heart rate variability, I think, gives you an insight on like how it's using this information, but like why heart rate variability is so important. I only gave sort of an overview of that, but once you understand it, it really is sort of a hack for us to check in with our bodies that I think is really interesting.
Really interesting. Yeah, I've read a lot about heart rate variability in the past, so I know this is a well-recognized metric. That's why it took so long, because it can't do that in 5 seconds. It has to watch as your heart recovers and so forth. All right, last thing I already have. It's this. It's the Ember mug. Tell us why you picked this.
Cheers.
You got one too. Cheers.
Yes.
Actually, I have to ask you, what's your optimal temperature?
It depends. If I'm having tea, it's at 135. If I'm having coffee, it's at 140.
Oh, I got to turn my coffee up. So tell us what the Ember mug is.
So the Ember mug, Ember came out with a thermos before, but the mug is new. It's ceramic. It has a heater built into the base, and it comes with a charging cradle that looks like a saucer. What it does is it connects over Bluetooth with your phone, and you can set the temperature that you would like your hot beverage to remain at for the course of the time that you're drinking the beverage. unless you take a long time and are away from the charger, which I think we'll talk about in a second. But this mug basically, you know, typically whenever you make coffee or you make tea, you're pouring water that's near, you know, 180, 200 degrees Fahrenheit. It's a lot hotter. And so the mug cools that down to whatever temperature you have set. It lets you know, hey, we've reached that perfect temperature. You can start drinking it. And when you set it down, it's not going to keep getting colder and colder and colder. I hate microwaved coffee with a passion. If my coffee gets cold, it's going to get some ice in it, or it's going in the trash, one of the two.
Never reheat coffee. Big mistake.
No.
Yeah.
Ugh. So this mug is fantastic. Like, it's $80. It is a ridiculous purchase that I've made, and I understand that. But it makes me happy because I get to drink a hot beverage every day that remains hot for the period of time that I'm drinking it. So it's fantastic for that. And I was curious if it will work the other way. If I put something in it that is like cooler and I want it to warm up, and it actually worked. That's not something that I would do very often, but it will, you know, warm your drink to a certain temperature as well.
Cool. Hot.
Hot. So hot.
Now, I have to say, the first thing that happened today when I sat down was I got a notification from my mug that I needed a firmware update. First time my coffee mug has ever asked for a firmware update. On the other hand, that's encouraging, right? That they do keep it up to date. I don't know what they need to update.
Yeah, I wish that it had release notes, because I was curious when I got that update. I was like, I wonder if the battery's going to last longer, because that's been the biggest thing for me is if I'm away from the charging cradle, then the battery tends to run out. It doesn't last as long as the thermos does.
Because my battery, it says my battery's dying now, and that's 15 minutes or something. That's nothing. And it was plugged in, wasn't it, John, when you removed it? Let me go to the Ember app. And you're going to have to help me organize my stuff. I shouldn't have to search for
that's
app.
What I do, though. I do that.
No.
Yeah.
I guess we all
my
do that.
Screens.
There's no really easy way to. So I come from, my Android phones, I can put stuff I use a lot in various places. I can have specialized folder, multiple folders with the same app, that kind of thing. So here's the warning that I need a firmware update. This is all the settings. Brightness, my battery level is 6%. Firmware update 259 available. I won't do that till I plug it back in. That's where I set the temperature. And so this is what I said. You say 140, huh? All right.
Coffee, that's where I have mine. Yeah.
I'm turning my coffee up to 140.
I like that it has little presets down there at the bottom. You can swipe up and set your presets for coffee and tea. And I think they have one for latte as well.
See, it says coffee 130, tea 132, latte.
Oh, see, I disagree with them.
Yeah, but you can edit. What's nice, you can edit those if you disagree. I think the UI is great. See, it's heating up and it's showing what here down at the bottom. Yeah, I love that part. It's showing that it's heating up by that's kind of cool. It's got little notches as it heads up to 140.
And you can set your color too. If you got multiple embers in the house, you can change the LED color.
Oh, that's a good idea. Because my mug is a different color than now. It's not cheap. This is kind of a luxury mug.
It is a splurge purchase. $80 bucks is not cheap for a mug. And you know, when I told my mom about this, she's very frugal, and I was talking about it, you know, all proud of it, and she says, how much was that? And then I did not want to tell her. I was like, can I like knock $20 off
That's
as I'm talking about it?
It was only like, $25, Mom. It was cheap.
Yeah, it's just $25. It's like, no, it's $80. I'm sorry, kind of thing.
Megan uses the mobile cup, you know, that's more like.
Oh, the thermos?
Is that called the thermos? Okay.
I think it's
I like this because it's actually a ceramic mug. Yeah, that's what she has, the travel mug.
There we go, Chop.
And it puts the temperature in an LED on the front, so you know what. I like this because it's actually like a real coffee mug, but it's not dishwasher safe.
It's not dishwasher safe. You got to hand wash, and it also, again, the battery is smaller in it, so it doesn't last as long. But if you keep you can buy the charging cradle separately. So if you wanted to, again, this is another splurge, and this is not something that I've done, Mom, if you're watching, but you could buy multiple charging cradles, and so you can keep it charging while you have your drink in there. You just have to be careful not to spill it down into the charging cradle, because it uses little peg pin things to do the charging, pogo pins, I think they're called.
Yep.
So you don't want to get those wet while charging.
Okay. I have to say, it is nice to have coffee that stays hot. I really
yes.
I do appreciate that a lot.
Me too. less wasted coffee. Because again, like I said, it goes either in the sink or I have to, you know, put some ice in it, and then it takes me a while to drink it that way. So this is nice that I don't ever have to dump it out, because microwave coffee is just, worst trick that the devil did play.
Well, actually, coffee gurus will tell you that reheating coffee is just not done, because it furthers the oxidation of the coffee.
There you go.
Really significantly. It does. It changes the flavor. It gives it a terrible flavor. So there's a good reason for that. And I've become kind of a coffee snob.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a good thing.
I agree to disagree.
It's nice to have good coffee, isn't it?
There you go. It's nice to have good coffee. I won't talk, you know, I'm not going to blame anyone else or think that you're bad for warming up your coffee. But it's like, for me, that's just not something I do. So if that makes me a snob, so be it.
Sometime, Micah, we'll get together. We'll talk about pulp washing beans. It's the new thing.
This is not something that I've heard of.
Oh, no. Yes, I know.
Pulp washing?
Pulp washed beans are like the coffee's tent. We'll talk.
There we go. We'll talk. Here, hold on. Let me hold my mug up.
With our coffee snob talk. Although we keep saying we got to do a coffee snob show, because
have me on. I'd love to.
Once you get used to good coffee, it's like, okay, I don't know why I was drinking that swill all this time.
Amen.
Amen, brother.
Amen.
Our show today, Micah Sargent's our guest from mobilenationsimore.com, and we'll have more in just a little bit. In fact, the news of the week coming up in just a bit. But first, a word from our sponsor, Active Campaign. I know a lot of you have businesses. We do. One of the great tips I got from Jason Calacanis was, and Kevin Rose told me this too, do a newsletter. Now, don't do a newsletter. Don't spam. We're not talking about spam. We're talking about sending emails to people who have asked for them, who have an interest in your business. The open rate on newsletters is like 50, 60%. People actually read those when you put good content in them. And it is a great way to not only to keep customers, but to get customers to come back. It's really a fantastic technique. If you have a growing business and you want to close more sales, let me tell you about Active Campaign. This is the best way to reach your customers, keep them engaged, keep them customers. Active Campaign solution goes beyond market automation. Maybe you've heard that phrase. No, this is about getting the right type of message to the right person at the right time. So if you've been sending blast emails, that's not it. That's not it. With the smart tools at Active Campaign, you can dynamically show, get this, different content in your messages depending on contact information, interactions, social data, interests. You're actually crafting the email to fit the needs and interests of the person you're emailing in. You can send personalized messages not just through their inbox, but when the customer's visiting your website, when they're on a mobile device. You could design eye-catching campaigns, because Active Campaign is a great drag-and-drop campaign builder. And they even have advanced split testing. You may have heard of A-B testing. They don't call it A-B testing because it's not A-B. It's A-B-C-D-E testing. You can find the exact content, layout, and settings your subscribers respond to up to 5 different versions of the split tests. More than one person in your business, of course, can use this. You get multi-user editing. You get revision history. Integrations with many, many other apps, so you can automatically put content in there from a variety of sources. You've got conditional content, geo-tracking, site tracking, social sharing, integration with Google Analytics, so you know when those emails are read, when you know who's seeing your emails or your website messages or your mobile messages. And, of course, it is mobile optimized. And I love this. With your subscription, image hosting is free. Identify, nurture, convert, and retain more customers with Active Campaign. If you've got a business, this is the single most effective way you can build your business. For a free 14-day trial, go to activecampaign.com/twit. And just for you, if you go there, we've got something pretty special. Look at all the things you get. Of course, you get the free trial. You also get a second month free if you sign up. You also get 2 free one-on-ones with their content experts to help you really get this nailed. And, of course, migration. If you're using some other platform, they'll bring it right in for you. All of that's included with this special offer, only because you're watching a Twit podcast. So go to activecampaign.com. activecampaign.com/twit. activecampaign.com/twit. It's the best way to build your business. Take it from me. It really, really works. All right. News of the hour. Let's start with Tim Cook. He's going to be deposed. This is from Mark Gurman. Mark's gotten to the point now where he has so many great tips, he's actually tweeting them. Actually tweeted this a few days ago. Apple CEO Tim Cook will be deposed June 27th in the Qualcomm lawsuit. Remember, Apple sued Qualcomm saying, you're not offering FRAND access to your patents. We consider your patents basic patents. Qualcomm pretty much owns the CDMA patents and many other patents that are used. Every mobile phone manufacturer, many mobile phone carriers pay Qualcomm license fees. Apple's been doing it for years. They sued, you know, we're not going to pay you anymore. We're going to stop right now because you're asking too much for these. It costs us too much money. Qualcomm responded with a counter lawsuit. I think the number is $1 billion. This is a significant amount of money. And Qualcomm's lawsuit says Apple, get this, is lying to regulators to spur investigations of Qualcomm. So Apple didn't want to pay royalties to Qualcomm or license fees for the IP. Qualcomm said, not only do you have to pay, you're going to the FTC and other regulators complaining about us so that they will investigate us. And that's not cool, Apple. Tim Cook will have to, not cool, man. This is actually something we've talked about in Europe with Google and other companies. Google's a really good example. Jeff Jarvis has pointed out that the publishers in Europe have gone to the EU saying, you ought to regulate Google because Google's taking ad dollars from them. You ought to regulate them. And the EU has been pretty responsive to that kind of stuff. I guess Qualcomm asserts the same thing's happening in the U.S. Tim Cook will do the fun deposition dance in June. article in The Verge from Tom Warren, who's saying something I've said for a long time. I wonder if you agree. Tom says, Apple has an iPad gesture dilemma. Mm-hmm. And
this is dead on.
I think so, too. When the iPhone 10 came out, I said, uh-oh, you got a problem because you have basically two different user interfaces. No home button on the iPhone 10. And actually, as I use it, I've become a real advocate of the iPhone 10's user interface. For one thing, I love the idea. Let me unlock it with my face. Come on, you know me. Come on, we've been friends for months. I love the swiping sideways to get to previous apps. Well, actually, I got to get in the home. So that really, to me,
is I use it all the time.
And by the way, it's not obvious that you can do that, but it's once you see that, you don't even do the recent apps anymore. It's such an easy way to go back and forth between apps is to swipe at the bottom there.
Sometimes I'll go a ridiculous amount even. It's like I would have gotten there faster had I just gone to my home screen. But it's like swipe, swipe. There's just something very delightful about that. And I, you know, Leo, I think this is like on two fronts. You have a point there about iPhone 10's, I feel, brilliant gestural system versus iPad Pros. But also iPad Pro has its own gesture issues regardless of iPhone and iOS because – I remember when, again, my colleague Serenity Caldwell put out this huge guide on how to use all the fun new stuff. Yeah, there's all these.
When iOS 11 came out, the swiping up and the swiping over and they completely.
I still don't know how to do split screen practically.
I can't. You know, half the time I give up because it's when I'm supposed to drag this over here and oh, wait a minute, that's not right.
That's
not what's supposed to happen. I mean, it just goes on and on and then getting to recents. From swiping up like this, and the recents are changed, the control panels. I mean,
that's where control center is.
What the hell? You know, they moved everything. So, yes, iOS 11 confused the heck out of iOS users, especially iPad users. And then they add the iPhone 10, which has a completely different model.
Control center up or down from the top right corner. Yeah, and so I do that all the time.
Yeah, ears matter. When you're talking an iPhone 10, the ears matter. You swipe down from the right ear on the notch. As you said, that's the control center. The left ear on the notch is something else.
Notifications and
where is it? Now it's not even working.
Because you don't have notifications right
now? I must there you go. It was unlocked or something. I don't know. Anyway, I just feel like yes, I mean I could get used to one. Just pick one, Apple.
Please. please.
Not three. Three's too much. So I predict, I don't know what Tom Warren thinks, but or you think, but I think Apple at some point has to unify this in the, and is going to have to, but this is a challenge, right? Because the reason the iPhone 10 has that, it because it lost the home button.
Yeah.
And it has the notch. Without the notch, does the left ear, right ear make sense? I don't know.
I think once you got it, once you've learned that behavior, it can be, there can be a notch or not. Because, you'll, I mean, there's still that little UI hint of the little line,
yeah,
right?
Right.
But I think, you know, we let's talk about, are we going to see an iPad that loses the home button? Because if we do, then we have to sort of go to the new gestural interface. And like I said, I mean, like we were both saying, I think it's way better. I want all of my devices to do it.
Lose the home button, you lose Touch ID. Does that mean you have to put Face ID on an iPad? Is there going to be a notch? You could see why this is a complicated thing for Apple. It, one would think a company like Apple would be planning ahead and unlikely to paint themselves into a corner, except that's exactly what they did with the Mac Pro and admitted. So it may be that they have inadvertently painted themselves into a corner, that they can't get rid of Touch ID on the iPad because they don't want to add Face ID to the iPad. They can't. You, if you put a fingerprint reader on the back, you're going to make a lot of people who use cases confused. I guess you could put a hole in the case. I don't know.
I think there's no reason not to add Face ID to an iPad. And the reason why I say that is because Face ID is more than just Face ID.
Here's the problem. I'll tell you why. I agree. There's a lot of advantages. But the iPad is routinely used both in portrait and horizontal mode. Where do you put the notch?
Aha. Uh-huh. That's a good point. I guess it'd have to stay where it was, and they would have to do better about the
sideways face recognition.
Mode. Yeah, it'd have to work in either mode.
They're going to have to invent sideways face recognition because you don't have bezels on the iPad. You don't have enough bezel on the top and the bottom to put it there, so you're going to have to put it where the camera is, right? That would be logical. Yeah. But then, as it stands now, if you try to do face recognition sideways on an iPhone 10, it doesn't work.
Correct. Now, I don't know what the exact sort of hardware/software limits are to that. If it's the dot projector, then in theory, they could just make it so that the dot projector worked in both modes, right, or maybe even had two dot projectors because they've got more room on an iPad. Who knows?
I bet they can do it. And by the way, there's enough bezel. You wouldn't have to have a notch on an iPad. You could just put the face stuff up here where the camera is right now. That'd be okay, right?
Yeah.
I would love to see the new UI. But remember, the iPad is all about this dock. I mean, are you ready in iOS, you know, what is it going to be? I guess 11.4 to have another completely new interface on the iPad?
That's true. Is it time to already move on? Yeah, we just locked into this. That's a good point.
I mean, I think all of that considered, there may be a case made for the iPhone 10 UI to go back to the old. Oh, no, that's not going to work.
Mm-mm, not without a home well, button. What are we going to do? Because we're in charge of Apple. How are we going to make this work?
Thank God I'm not in charge of Apple, right? But I do think that I honestly think Apple's painted themselves into a corner. And it's too bad because I do love the iPhone 10 UI. Maybe it only makes sense on a device of this size. That's probably the case. Apple's just going to go forward and have, really, they have, in fact, they have three UIs because they have the Macintosh, they have iOS on the iPhone and iOS on the iPad. And at some point, I fully believe that Apple's going to get rid of Mac OS and make everything be iOS. And at that point, you really need to put more desktop-like capabilities in iOS for the iPad. And yeah. I think maybe you do see a fork in the road that continues between the iPhone and the iPad.
I want to see the depth sensing technology come to iPad. And so that's why I'm super pro advocate for the, you know, iPad getting Face ID. Cause it's less about that for me. And it's the depth sensing stuff. I mean, we see now GarageBand, it's silly, but you can control certain things with the guitar and the piano using your face, using gestures with your face, because it uses the front facing camera on the iPhone. And those are things that make more sense on the iPad, in my opinion. And so I could see that very easily coming to the iPad. And with now we've got, you know, this push more into education, there's so much like little kids, you know, using their facial expression to control things on an iPad as they're learning, as they're maybe, you know, going through a storybook or something like that. And the character in the book responds to the way that their face is moving. There's so many possibilities there that I think would be awesome on an iPad. And so those are the reasons that I want that technology to come to the iPad. And then, yeah, if I get similar controls so that I'm not swiping down from the top right corner of the iPad every time I'm trying to access Control Center, that'd be great too.
Other news, John Giandrea, the former head of search and AI at Google, announced he was leaving and being replaced, and literally 24 hours later, Apple snapped him up. He's now chief of AI. Actually, what is his title at Apple? It's not just AI. He's chief.
Oh, goodness. He reports to Tim Cook, and he does machine learning and AI for the company. I can't remember what the exact title is,
though. Consensus is that this is a much-needed boost to Siri's brains.
Yes. I mean, what I love is that in the email that Tim Cook sent to the employees, he was very quick to be like, "Now, I know this person comes from Google, and we give Google hell for you know, stealing your data and da-da-da-da-da, but he's got our values and is very concerned with those things." So Tim Cook was like, "Let me get this out right
quick,
away.
Quick. He's got our values. Honest. Honest. It's here. Today's the day. You can get your red iPhone 8. No iPhone 10 in red. This is a... Apple does this every year, the product red version. The one thing they've done right this year is instead of a white face on the red iPhone 8, they've got a black face. So that's really good because people said the old one looked like a candy cane.
I bet they loved that. Like, oh, man, the candy cane.
Anyway, why? It is available for order as we speak. Are you going to get one?
No.
I
love my iPhone 10, and it doesn't come in red. And if it did, I wouldn't get it anyway.
I want
my iPhone 10 to come in rose gold.
You're a rose gold kind of guy.
Yeah. Christina Warren got me onto rose gold back when at WWDC, I saw her rose gold iPad. And I was like, you know what? This is a cool color. It's different. I'm gonna rock this as much as I can from that point on. And then, you know, the iPhone was only offered in white or black, and I got it in white. But it's mostly covered by a case all the time.
That's what I was going to point out. Here I am using the Apple Folio case, which I really have come to love. This is my favorite iPhone 10 case. And you don't know what color my iPhone is. You
I can't don't. Tell.
The only thing you really see is the face, and you don't see much of that really on an iPhone 10. So who cares?
Yeah. Who cares? Exactly.
Who cares? Get a red case. It is for a good cause. Project Red, of course, is the charity to fight AIDS, and I know Bono's very involved in this, and I think it was Bono's connection with Apple that helped Apple.
And buying this phone, you will not get any of his albums on the iPhone.
And so there's another plus. No, I'm a big U2 fan. I am a big U2 fan, but I don't want anything pushed onto my phone. I still own that album. Every once in a while, it just seems to appear on my devices.
It's like, I'm still here.
Geeking Tom in our chat room says, what case? That's the Apple leather folio case, which I use as a kind of a thin wallet case. I just have a few cards and some money in here. It's thin enough and it's soft enough that I can just keep my phone in. I like protecting the front of the phone, and it has that flap on the front. There it is. But it's a little pricey, $99, but I do like this case.
And it was frightening seeing how many companies tried to come out with iPhone 10 and iPhone 8 cases that offered the wallet option on the back of the phone.
Yeah, you can charge it.
Yeah, people would put them on the wireless chargers and ruin their different cards by doing that.
Yeah.
So not smart.
So this one I wireless charge every night. Works fine. Doesn't bother the cards, and it doesn't bother the case. All right, we ready for some questions, Mike? I'm going to put your thinking cap on here. I'm going to ask you some tough questions. This one comes from Matthew Howell. He is a switcher. Just came to the iPhone from Android. Just bought a new iPhone 8, 256 gigs. Wow. To put it bluntly, now, first of all, Matthew just got it today. So this email might be a little premature. To put it bluntly, I'm having a really hard time adjusting to the iPhone. I've been trying to use it all day. I even took a basic iPhone class, and to be honest, this phone is making me feel pretty stupid. For starters, I can't figure out how to correctly use their new home button. I think it's called Force Touch. Okay, there's a problem right there, but we'll help you in a second.
We'll get to that.
If I press it too hard, I get a menu that appears under my finger, or I end up turning this Siri thing on. All I want to do is delete an app off my screen. So he's got many paragraphs. Let's deal with this one first.
Start there.
That is not the home button. The home button is swiping up, right?
Well, he's got an iPhone 8.
Oh, he's got an 8.
Yeah.
That's right, dummy.
So there is a home button. However,
oh, that's a different user interface. Let me get my other user face out. So you press the physical home button. Yeah, yes. And that brings you home. But that is not how you delete an app.
I think he's talking about the fact that the button doesn't actually press down, and you may mistake that for being something called Force Touch, depending on what they talked about
in this class. Haptic feedback.
Correct.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, that's one of the things about taking the classes is they probably introduce you to a lot of terms and many of those like day to day, you just don't need to know them. If you are. So the question here is,
how do you delete an app?
Exactly. So this is like this is something that will always be something that you'll have to think about, but it's something that you get used to over time. And there are plenty of people out there that complain about the fact that it's hard to sort of notice the difference in pressure between I just want to delete an app or I want to access the Force Touch menu. So think of it as the difference between pressing an elevator button and holding your finger on the top of an elevator button. You don't want to add any pressure down onto the screen whenever you were trying to delete an app. You just lay your finger on top of the button, or the app in this case, and wait until the button starts or the app starts to wiggle, and you'll see a little X in the top corner, and then you can delete and remove that app. So don't add any pressure to it, because that's where you're triggering the Force Touch menu, where you're getting to shortcuts and things like that that are built into the app.
This really is confusing, not just for Android switchers, but for everybody.
For everyone,
and most people I know don't end up using Force Touch because you just have to remember it. It's convenient when you do remember it.
Yeah, and for the things that, there are certain things that I like it for, but I don't use many of those app shortcut menu things.
That's the problem. And you can't always know which app will use it or not. So it really is only for apps that all the time I use this app and I know Force Touch does this and this is what I want. And I find I hardly ever use Force Touch. So the real key is, in the part of the confusion is there's no Force Touch in the Android world. There's touch and there's long press. So maybe it will help you, Matthew, if I say the way to delete an icon is long touch. Just keep holding it until it jiggles. Don't press hard. Just long touch, not Force Touch. I figured out how to add my fingerprint to the home button, but every time I use the fingerprint on my phone, he continues, to open my phone, I end up turning that Siri thing on again. Speaking of that Siri thing, she keeps telling me to ask her something, but when I do finally ask her something, she doesn't do anything. All I get is a pulsating colored line at the bottom of my screen. All right, that's two parts. What is he double tapping? What is he doing to get Siri to come up?
I think so. All of this home button stuff, it goes back to what we were just talking about. If you press on the home button, that's going to do something totally different. So we're going to long touch on the home button. That's going to get you your fingerprint read. That's going to let you into your phone.
Don't press.
You don't want to add any pressure to it.
Yeah.
Now, when you long press, not just long touch, but long press on the home button, that's going to trigger Siri.
And that's when you get the dung-dung.
Dung-dung. And that's whenever you see the waves as you're talking to it. I am a little confused why Siri is not responding. Maybe if
he's holding it, that's why. So the idea with Siri is the way you're supposed to do this, press it and let go. And now Siri will be listening until you stop talking.
Who, me?
If you press it and hold it, it keeps recording. So now it's going to be listening and it's going to continue to listen until I let go of it. And that's the problem. Again, this has to do with overloading the gestures because they want it to do a number of things, giving the gestures too many things to do. So what's happening here is it's continuing to listen. Actually, I think it stops after a couple of minutes. It won't listen forever, but it's continuing to listen until I let go, and then it will process. You see, now the back and forth means it's processing. It's going to say, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. So the trick on this is press and let go. Whoops. Long press and let go to get her to listen and respond. Long if you hold it, she's going to keep listening until you let go. It's a way of telling her, keep listening until I let go.
If you find yourself having trouble, remembering maybe what different Siri commands you want to do, that's where that long press is helpful, because you can press it, then you can take a second. Okay, I want to ask it to turn on the lights. You can say that and let go of the button.
Exactly. The news app is a total mess. Oh, Lord. I am so... Matthew, you really, give it more than a day. You'll love it. The news app is a total mess. Every time I try to see what's in my tech news feed, I keep getting bombarded with news stories about Donald Trump. I don't care about Donald Trump. So the news app, I am not a fan of, although a lot of people are. I think the Apple News app leaves a lot to be desired. And you'll see if you go to my news folder, I have 15 other apps that I use, including Nuzzle, Google News, Texture, of course, our sponsor. Flipboard's really great for news. And the one thing you should understand about the Apple News app is it's completely configurable. And so if you're seeing something you don't want to see, you can easily say, I don't want to see that anymore. You can get rid of all political news, for instance. So I think that the Apple News app gets a little bit better as you use it because it's paying attention. But you might also really want to look at what channels you have, what subject matter you're following, and remove stuff that you don't want to see. If you don't want to see politics, remove stuff. Nevertheless, it's still going to give you stuff you don't want. And frankly, for the longest time, I was getting weather for the Midwest. I don't know
that's
why.
Where I am.
Yeah,
you got my weather.
I thought I was living with Micah. I don't know. So I don't know about you, Micah. I know a lot of people love the news app. I never use it. I hate it.
I use it for its push notifications so I can get quick news. Most of the time I just read the notification that pops up, and then that's all I want from it.
I really don't want to know about the skin tightener every man should own, period. That's an ad. And that's an ad given
water.
Water and soap, okay? That's giving way
so much space.
That's so much space. It looks like news. There's a little tiny blue bug that tells you it's an ad, but you wouldn't really know otherwise. You know what? I wish I could delete it. It's terrible. You can't.
I think you can.
Can you?
I thought you can, yeah. Let's see. See, there's the
there's the jiggle, jiggle, jiggle. It doesn't really delete it. It actually keeps it, but it hides it.
Unavailable. Top tip for Matthew, really quickly. If you want to get rid of Donald Trump news, you would open up the news app. You can tap search. You tap in Donald Trump.
Just block it.
You'll see the Donald Trump topic. And at the top, there's a little heart
unheart
thing. Just hit the unheart and that'll stop showing up for you.
And it'll be very satisfying. Yeah, I think this is a very common complaint. So you use it, but mostly for notifications.
There every once in a blue moon, if something really catches my attention, I'll pop in and look at it. But most of the time, I just want a notification because I know if I go to Twitter later that day, I'll be able to find like an article from the New York Times or something about it.
Yeah. I don't even really understand the last question. When the top of my screen to see my notifications, my screen ends up locking itself. So
yeah, I was having trouble with that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Maybe when I touch the top of my screen, when I swipe the top of my screen to see my notification, my screen ends up locking itself, so I have to unlock the phone with my fingerprint. You must be accidentally hitting the lock button somehow.
Yeah.
That's the only way I could think of to do that.
Yeah, there is a lock button, so maybe that's it, yeah. Give it some time. Exactly, Matthew. It'll become easier and easier. It's always a little painful to switch operating systems like that. People who go from iOS to Android have similar complaints. But by the time you see this, you'll feel
Be fine.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we'll do one more, and then we're going to take a break because we're almost out of time, and I want to get our app caps before we go. This is from more feedback from educators. We ask educators. Megan and I recognize that we are not experts in the state of the art in education these days. We have some experience. Megan's husband teaches high school. I was on the board of that high school for many, many years. And so we both have some experience, but we're not teachers. So Doug wrote to us, I'm a retired educator who's watched technology work its way into the classroom. I've had the opportunity to lead education tech efforts in two districts. Well, I'm not saying I'm an expert. I think I have some experiences that can inform my opinions. I'd agree, Doug. I'm excited about the demos they gave. Like any of them, I'm sure they look pretty cool on stage and may have some challenges in the classroom. I'm very pleased with the advances in iWorks and adding pencil support. I'm excited for the kids and what they will create. Annotation, a very nice addition and something necessary in the digital teaching world, I'd agree. Digital books will excite many teachers because they love being creators as well. I hope the standards movement does not dampen that creativity. Excellent message on privacy, as has been said by others. I tend to believe Apple's commitment to this. That is really Apple's selling point at this point, is privacy. Although, as we've pointed out, Google's very clear that the Google Classroom stuff is private. It's not, that's not treated the same way as other Google applications. He says, Apple Teacher is awesome. I suspect it'll be rich with content. Love the community of learners aspect of it. I totally support the idea of how education technology can give voice to students who are marginalized. I have mostly served that type of student in my career, and tools like this would be so cool to motivate them. Of course, that's my big problem with it is, school, these are all expensive mm-hmm. tools for those schools. And unless they have grants, they're not going to be able to afford iPads and iPencils and all of that stuff. Finally, I loved how they gave teachers time on stage, and I would agree with you on that. I know it may have felt cheesy to some outside education, but the message of appreciation from Tim Cook and others was very gratifying. Doug, I agree. I think that was the takeaway for me from the Apple Education event was Apple loves education and loves teachers. That was clear. Mm-hmm. I think that the actual offerings were somewhat scant and a little disappointing. I was hoping for better support economically for teachers and better support in terms of cost cuts in the iPad. I think it's a very pricey product. And unfortunately, I think Apple's solutions are very proprietary. And I'm not a fan of proprietary in schools. Michael, what do you think? You're closer to school than I am.
Well, I have siblings that all went through one iPad per kid program after I had left the school district. And the ones that followed that, they were part of those. And it is nice, but the school district from which I hail and from, that my siblings went to it's a more wealthy school district. And right. So I'm right there with you in terms of these are really cool things. And this, you can play this beautiful music and have kids narrating these stories and talk about how awesome this is. But if we can't get it into the hands of people who need this kind of technology, then there is, then what is this for? And I would love to see, maybe Apple and other companies are doing this kind of thing and are figuring out how to get that into the hands. But let's talk about that stuff. Let's share that as well. It might not be the most, PR friendly conversation to have, but let's talk about how they're working to get these into marginalized kids' hands and into school districts that maybe can't afford them on their own, because that seems to be the biggest, that's like one of the biggest criticisms that I've heard across the entire board is the fact that these are expensive things. And so if Apple took the time to talk about that, if that's something that they're doing, that would have been, I think, a good and feel good moment for sure.
That's exactly what I was hoping for. Where's the $100 million, $200 million for schools to get them started in all of this? It really, in the long run, if you take away the very nice rhetoric about how much Apple loves teachers and education, they announced no price cut on the iPad. They announced pencil support. That's great, but schools have to buy the pencil. Mm-hmm. I just don't think, in my opinion, the iPad's not great for education at all. I think a Chromebook is a better solution. But if kids have money, and they have an iPad at home, there's a lot to be said for that. And boy, if Apple would just somehow subsidize low-income kids and get them iPads, I think there would be a lot of value.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you, we're going to get to the picks of the week in just a second, but first, our show today brought to you by TurboTax. Ay, ay, ay. 1 week from today. 1 week from today, your taxes are due, but don't panic. You know what? You got time because you got TurboTax, and this new TurboTax Live is awesome. I've used TurboTax I used it for years for my own taxes. Now that we have a company, I have to go to very expensive CPA, and it's a very elaborate process. But when my mom told me she was paying $500 a year to have her taxes done, I said, Mom, you're crazy. Let me do it. And I've been doing her taxes on TurboTax now. My daughter just got her first W-2. She got her first job this year. I said, no problem, honey. I got TurboTax. TurboTax is fast, easy. In fact, it's incredibly satisfying. I actually, don't tell the IRS, love doing my taxes with TurboTax. It even imports all the numbers I need. And because I've done my mom before, it imports all the data from the previous return and says, well, what's changed? TurboTax asks you a lot of questions about your life, what's going on, what transitions might have been made. But we can get even better with the new TurboTax Live, because you can get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or EA right on the screen very affordably. Costs less than 1 hour with my CPA, about half. You can connect to a tax expert via one-way video. Don't worry, you don't have to put on pants. And you can do it as often as you need for answers and advice on your taxes, including, by the way, they're all up on the new tax laws. So for tax planning, this is very helpful, too. You can even have an expert review your return before you file, which gives you that extra confidence. They can make any changes. They can remind you of things you might have missed. They could actually save you money. And it's all backed by a 100% accuracy guarantee. You'll file with complete confidence with TurboTax Live. Go to TurboTaxLive.com/iOS today. It's not too late. If you're an 11th hour tax doer, as I often am, I love TurboTax. And by the way, the e-file means I don't have to wait in line at the post office. I love it that the post office stays open until midnight and they have the people there. But I don't do that. Maybe I'll drive by and wave. TurboTaxLive.com/iOS today. Do what I do. Use TurboTax and get that advice too. You know, my mom is, after I do her taxes, is calling me, you know, like she's texting me all the time saying, well, what, you know, are you sure? Did you? And I'm just going to say, here, I got the TurboTax Live expert. Just here's her number. You call TurboTaxLive.com/iOS today. We thank them for their support of iOS today. All right. Micah was wondering, when do I wear the hat? Now, Micah, now.
Now it's
cap time. I have a...
Oh, I love that.
Well...
Your foil cap.
It's my tinfoil hat.
Because that's fantastic.
I'm a paranoid nut job. No, I'm not. But... since Zuckerberg's testifying today, I thought this would be a good day to wear the tinfoil hat.
That's excellent. I don't think paranoid nut jobs admit that they're paranoid nut jobs, so you're fine. You pass.
Even paranoids have enemies. What are you wearing?
I'm just wearing a boring hat. I didn't have
it's
anything
an
special.
Actual hat. Like, yeah, one that you wear in hat. Real life.
I didn't know if wigs counted, so I didn't wear a wig. I've got this big, this gray-haired wig that
wigs
I thought about.
Count.
But, oh, darn it. Well, next time.
Oh, save the wig for next time. All right, what's your app cap?
All right. My app cap is it's an app called Unsplash, and many of you have probably heard of Unsplash. It is a site that has CC by zero, which means Creative Commons licenses is none. You can use those photos in commercial uses and in personal uses. You don't have to credit if you don't want. It makes it very easy if you know you're working on projects. So the Unsplash app gives you access to these gorgeous photographs that you can make your background on your iPhone. It's a quick and easy way to sort of see what they have that's new there. And I'm the type of person that likes to change up my home screen often with a new photo. And so the photo that I have right now, again, I know this isn't as excellent as having your cool
screen there.
Oh,
that's pretty. That's pretty.
Yeah. And I always, anytime I share my screen, I always get people, where's that from? Where'd you get that? And it's always from Unsplash.
So you don't have to ask permission or anything.
Yeah, no. It's Unsplash is CC by zero. All of the images there are CC by zero.
So tell me what I do. I drag this. So I find a picture I like. I drag it over to the corner.
Yep,
and this is free, by the way. This is all free.
Free app.
And now it's in my photos.
Yep, and your photos and available for you to...
if I wanted to change my wallpaper, I could do that?
Yep.
Let me go to wallpaper.
And if you wanted to use it for a different project or something like that, then it would be there for that as well.
Now my wallpaper looks like that. That is beautiful.
Right? And all, you know, if you're someone who likes to change it up a lot, then that's a great idea. So here's a top tip. I like to pair Unsplash with... any app that offers a blurring option. And what I'll do is for my lock screen, I will set it as the raw Unsplash photo. For my home screen, I will blur it and darken it a little bit so that it doesn't interfere with my different app tiles. So on the lock screen, you know, you're seeing that. When I swipe up to go to my home screen, it still is showing that ocean photo that I have in the background, but it's a little bit more blurred out and it's a little more subtle.
Do you have a particular blurring app you like?
I like to use, oh goodness, what's it called? It starts with an E. It's got a fox.
Let me see what I have.
Enlight.
Enlight. Oh, Enlight's great. Yeah, I have Enlight. Okay, let me open it up. I think I have Enlight on this one. I have it on my
iPhone. Remember to make a duplicate of the photo.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, you'll blur both of them.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I've added a few photos because I found quite a few I like here.
There you go.
I added a few photos to my my photos library here. This one's really pretty. I like this.
That's perfect for a lock screen.
And this would be a great one too, right? Wouldn't that be a great screen on, you know, a ocean? And then I just did that one. So I'll duplicate this, blur one of them, use the blurred background as my desktop for my, because I don't want to, you know, make it hard to read the icons.
Exactly. Yeah. You want it to just sort of be subtle in the background and your icons can
And then when you unlock your phone or your iPad, it's kind of like it goes out of focus.
It's kind of a really cool animation.
Ooh, nice. You're so smart. That's a great app. Unsplash. It's free, and it's all of these are Creative Commons Zero, which means the photographer has given you permission to do anything you want with them.
Yep. And so again, like even if you just want to use those in you know, work projects or anything like that, those photos are available for that.
I know exactly where this picture was taken. I have this picture from the Musée d'Orsay in Paris.
Wow.
I've taken this exact because it's such a great silhouette. So this is nice. Wow. So people post their stuff on Unsplash because they want people to see their stuff and they don't mind if people use it.
And don't mind if everybody uses it.
There's even themes so you can, this is great. Like simple, clean ones. See if you have an idea of what you're looking for wallpaper. How cool is this? Found typography.
And like, so I've yet to find a photo that is not gorgeous on the site. The photos are all incredible.
This is really cool.
And if you download them on your computer, they're high quality, you know, huge, not huge images, but big images. It's a great site. And yeah, the app is fantastic.
A good wallpaper site. My God, that's great. Yes.
Oh, that's fun.
Unsplash. My app is something that actually I have to give credit to Mike Elgin. He wrote an article in Computer World this week. It's on Elgin.com as well. On two must-have apps for iOS that he uses every day. One of them I don't like. It's a to-do list that has a timer. I don't need the timer. Ooh. I got enough guilt about not doing things to have it. But I guess, likes to get things done.
Hmm. Your Welltory rating is going to go up if you use it with the timer.
Exactly. But this one was really cool. Now, I've mentioned Drafts in the past because I use Drafts all the time for quick notes that I want to process later. So Drafts is more general. Excuse me. We'll do the same thing. But let me say, for people for whom Drafts was confusing, Mike's pick, Noto, N-O-T-O, is great. It's free. For $1.99, you can get a few more features. The idea is, if you use email a lot, remember to pack for our trip, okay? I'm going to just quickly... Sorry, I should have turned off notifications. There's my Ring doorbell. So I'm going to quickly write that note. And if I swipe right... Now you can't. I have to do it so you can see it. If I swipe right, it'll send it to Lisa. If I swipe left, it'll send it to me. So I'm going to swipe left, and it emails me that note. That is now in my email. So what it really is for email reminders. There, if you pay for it, you can even have more email addresses. You can have up to 5 for $1.99 plus a few other features. But the free gives you swipe left, and that's really, you know, one email address is all you need. Just a simple app for quickly emailing stuff. You can add pictures, by the way. You can do anything you could do on a keyboard. So if you want to quickly take a picture of where you parked and email it to yourself, things like that. Isn't that cool? Noto. N-O-T-O.
Cool.
Thank you, Mike Elgin. I stole this from you. Email yourself.
If they add messages in the future, then I am so...
Text yourself.
I'd pay $2.99 to have a text option because I will text myself all the time.
Let me then give a little second plug to Drafts because you can do that with Drafts. Have you ever tried Drafts?
No, I've never. I probably have it downloaded. But
you should, because Renee Ritchie did a nice vector with the creator of Drafts and Merlin Mann talking about it. And that's what sold me. And I've mentioned it before as an app cap. It is the same idea. You write a note... And then you process it by, but you can do, you can have lots of different things. So for instance, I can quickly send a text to myself. I can email myself. I could put it in my calendar. I can put it in a monthly journal. I can tweet it, post it to Google Plus. I can add it to my blog. I could on and on and on. And I, so this is, the idea is you enter text and then you have a variety of very quick ways to process it. So for that capability that you wanted to message yourself, this would be a simple thing to do. You create a task that says message myself, and Drafts would send it along to you.
Perfect.
So that's a second one, but it's not a good one because I already mentioned it on other shows. Drafts is very nice. Noto, if Drafts was too much for you, you just want to email yourself something quick, great solution. Micah Sargent, you're the greatest. Find Micah's work at iMore. I'm going to read all of your Home Hub stuff. I can't wait to learn how to use Apple's HomeKit.
Excellent. If you have any questions, you can always hit me up.
Yeah, because I know him.
Yeah, you do. You do.
but you could also probably hit him up. He's on Twitter as well. What's your Twitter handle?
It's just at Micah Sargent.
Easy enough. Sargent. You'll also find he has many podcasts. Tell us about all the podcasts.
I'm going to tell you about my most recent one. And then I'll mention a tech one. The most recent one, I just launched it with a person I've been friends with since middle school, actually. The podcast is called Lucid, and it's just at lucid.show. It is a sleep science and dream interpretation podcast.
Ooh.
So it's part science and information and part comedy. We're getting dreams from the audience, and they'll send them in. We'll interpret them on the show and have a good time, sort of coming up with ridiculous explanations for your dreams. So the first episode that's out there, Tori and I took turns interpreting the other person's dream. And so this was just between us while we kicked the show off. But now we've already got dreams from listeners, so we're excited to interpret those going forward.
Was there actually a tiny hatchet and a Negroni in the dream?
Yeah, in the dreams. Yeah, mine had a Negroni and hers had a tiny hatchet. So and we tied lots of symbolism to those. So check that one out. And then I do Clockwise on Relay FM, which is the 30-minute tech podcast that I do with Dan Morin. So if you're you just want a quick little blip of tech for the day, then we've got two guests that come on the show, four topics, 30 minutes, and you're done.
Isn't Micah great? Micah Sargent. Aww. And it's mikah.co, right, for the website?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you're looking for all of the links that are available, you can go to chihuahua.coffee.
Chihuahua Coffee?
Yes, that is chihuahua.coffee. That's my sort of link page with stuff to my social media and podcasts and whatnot.
That's a good thing.
That's right. Renee's fault, actually.
Chihuahua.
He gave me that one.
I love it. Chihuahua.coffee. Nobody knows how to spell Chihuahua. That's the only thing wrong with that.
There are actually Google searches now for how to spell Chihuahua.
Yeah, spell Chihuahua. Nice. Thank you, Micah Sargent. I appreciate it. A tip of the ember to you.
Yes.
I hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you all for watching the show. We do iOS Today every Tuesday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific. That's noon Eastern. That's 1600 UTC. You can watch at twit.tv/live. You can also join us in the chat room if you do that at irc.twit.tv. And if you'd like to be in studio, just email tickets@twit.tv. You can come by and watch me and Megan do the show. You can also get the show on demand. I mean, that's how most people consume iOS today, at twit.tv/iOS, audio and video. You take your pick. But there's also plenty of places you can get it just by subscribing. In fact, get your Apple Podcasts or your Google Play or your Overcast or your Pocket Cast and make sure you subscribe so you get every episode the minute it's available. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Now, Micah, you have to throw your hat at iOS Today.